all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense. It is Tuesday, May 16th. Up here on the shores of Lake Wissota, it is 51 degrees. It's another beautiful day up north. Nice to have you along. It's a little bit warmer than it was yesterday when there were actually some upper 30 degree readings across the Northwoods. We have 51 here up on the lake. Hayward is at 44. That's the cool spot this morning. Wausau, you're at 56. Amory coming in at 50, 50 in Rapids as well. 56 in Green Bay. Waukesha, 52. Madison, 52 degrees. But it is just a simply gorgeous morning. This is the reason we endure winter. This is the reason we do this, because, you know, the mosquitoes and all the other bugs aren't here quite yet. The sun is staying up much later, getting up nice and early. Everything is so lush and green at this point. So just enjoy it. We've got a nice day or two ahead of us yet before our next chance at precipitation. We'll get the full weather forecast from Weatherology coming up in our next hour. Coming up on the program today, justice has been delayed but still not denied in the case of the fake electors. For the second time in a week now, there's been a setback for the people who filled out fraudulent paperwork claiming that Donald Trump won Wisconsin in 2020, when he did not. We'll have the latest on the fake electors, their ties to the coup planning by Donald Trump, and we'll also have the latest in the uplifting stories that we bring you through Up North News. Christina Laurie has The Uplift. That's our weekly review of some of the more positive stories that we run, including a story about all the love and encouragement that leaves a classroom awash in sticky notes. In our second hour, we'll talk about, instead of planes, trains, and automobiles, we'll do cars, bikes, and tractors. Wisconsin drivers have completed another season of navigating winter roads, but that only means some new types of vehicles are joining them out there, motorcycles, tractors, other farm equipment, and we'll focus on that farm machinery that is still too often being struck by motorists, especially during the planting and harvesting seasons. We'll talk to Hans Breitenmoser and to a UW Extension agriculture agent about that topic. We'll get an update on Wausau area happenings with Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio. And along the way, if you'd like to comment, ask a question, weigh in on anything we're talking about, our studio line, as always, is 844-967-2789. We'd love to hear from you, or you can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Or if you're watching the live video feed of this show on Facebook, you can just put a comment there, and we may put it up on screen during the video portion of our show at the Up North News Facebook page or the Facebook pages for Civic Media and for Bull Falls Radio. As mentioned, Aaron Zommers is in Madison, where, what did I say before there, 52 degrees there, so another pleasant morning in your part of the state as well.
Yeah, that feels about right for what it felt like this morning. And yeah, it's very nice out. Once again, getting to hang out with the birds a little bit before I head out to work.
Although you had a lot of work yesterday, I made an appearance on Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers, and there you were running the board there. Luke was running the board for me last Friday when you were off. It seems to be springtime musical chairs as everybody gets a little time off.
Yeah, now we just got to figure out how on earth Evan and I are supposed to cover for when Luke needs someone to cover him.
we that labor shortage is everywhere, folks, and that includes the radio station, so you know we're always looking for good help there. I'm sure there's a way to do it. I mean, sleep is really overrated, right?
Yeah, more. I mean, as long as no one has to drive or anything.
Yeah. I mean, that whole time space continuum means nothing when you got to fill a schedule. So, you know, good luck with that. In the Up North News newsletter, it comes out every morning around 5 a.m. And UW Green Bay is launching the state's only training program for caregiver supervisors to address a crisis that's out there, because about 1/4 of all long-term caregiver positions are currently vacant. And that's a problem that's only going to get worse as more baby boomers retire. You have the impact from long COVID and so many other challenges out there. And so UW Green Bay is trying to help fill that gap by training caregiver supervisors. And that's a program that is being funded by President Biden's American Rescue Plan Act. So details are in the newsletter this morning. A little sports note from in there, taking note that the Wisconsin Badgers are being carefully watched by college football experts. Not to say they're predicting a great season or a bad season, but waiting to see what happens with Luke Fickell, the new head coach. The team is undergoing its biggest overhaul in a long time. Although, as CBS Sports noted, Fickell is moving away from the power run offense that has defined the Badger football program for decades. And when you consider that he was the first coach to ever lead a group of five program, Cincinnati, to the college football playoff, he's definitely worth watching to see what will happen with Badger football in the coming season. So again, those stories and much more are in our newsletter. If you go to upnorthnewswi.com, you click on newsletter in the top banner, and you will be subscribed to that and see it every morning. So you can get those uplifting stories with Christina in our newsletter, and we'll hear from her again at 6:30. You can be up early with me on the radio, and you can be up to date on social media news and features with Sherita Booker with everything that we do at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll take a little break. We've got sports. If you're able to stand it, to hear what happened to the Brewers in St. Louis last night. And then we'll get to headlines, including the fake electors case that's back in the news and the Durham dud, an investigation by the Trump administration into the so-called deep state and what they found out. The answer, not much. We'll be right back. You're up north. George Benson to get us going here with the masquerade. Are we talking about masquerading electors?
Are we really happy here with this lonely game we're playing?
Or people masquerading as investigators who are investigating the Russia investigation. So much to talk about as we get into headlines here at 6:15, right after we hear about sports. And my wife's a physician. She's not an athletic trainer, but she raises a very valid concern that the St. Louis Cardinals will not be able to play tonight's game against the Brewers because perhaps their legs are worn out from running around the bases so many times and beating the Brewers 18-1. I fortunately missed that eighth inning, that 10-run eighth inning for the Cardinals that included a grand slam. Freddy Peralta, not his best start of the season. He went 5 1/3 innings, but he gave up a season-high 6 runs and also 5 walks while allowing 6 hits. Wade Miley will be on the mound tonight, where hopefully fortunes turn around. With that reminder that Civic Media does include a couple of Brewer stations for you in the Fox Valley, you can listen on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM, and also in Richland Center, news from the center at 107.7 FM and 1450 AM for tonight's game against the St. Louis Cardinals. All right, now to some headlines, and you can react to them. You can vent a little about them. You can share what else is on your mind by calling us at 844-967-2789, or you can comment on our Facebook live video feed as we get to the news. That includes, we'll start with the fake electors. And yes, we're still talking about the 2020 presidential election because justice is still being sought against the folks who were plotting to overturn an American election. Now, you'll recall that last week we told you that a judge had ordered the Wisconsin Elections Commission to rehear a complaint filed with the commission about the fake electors, because when they heard the case the first time, they had a deadlock, 3-3. The Elections Commission is made up of 3 Republicans, 3 Democrats. Who came up with that kind of a scenario? The Republicans who created the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Why did they deadlock 3-3 on whether to sanction or investigate the fake electors? Because a fake elector was among them. So the actual vote was 6-0 at the time. They said, we're not going to investigate this. They also, you know, the Democrats on the commission knew that there'd be a 3-3 gridlock anyway. And at the time, all they had was the flimsy excuse that we now know in hindsight was that it was they were just covering themselves in case, you know, a court found that there was actual voter fraud, even though none existed. There was no evidence of it or anything like that. So the Elections Commission at the time voted 6-0 not to hear the complaint, but they also had a fake elector in the room with them. And last week, a Dane County judge said that ain't right. And so they need to hear the case again, but this time with 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans without the fake elector in the room. And so we will see if the Elections Commission will, well, they will rehear the complaint. We'll see if they actually take action to sanction the people who fraudulently posed as electors. Well, now, yesterday, that same judge ruled in a lawsuit that's been filed against the fake electors and has ruled that that can proceed in Dane County Circuit Court where it was originally filed. The fake electors were putting up a defense that said, well, not all of the fake electors live in Dane County. And so, you know, these lawsuits have to be done in different courts in different counties. And the Dane County judge rightly noted that that's, like he said last week, that ain't right. He says, Wisconsin law does not allow the problematic consequence of 10 judges simultaneously litigating the same claims in 10 different courts or 10 juries, some 120 jurors, hearing the same claims and rendering 10 different verdicts. Which seems to make sense. And again, I'm a little frustrated that these things aren't happening sooner, but it is still a little progress just the same, as Dane County Circuit Judge Frank Remington made the ruling that the lawsuit could go forward just in Dane County Circuit Court, where one of Trump's attorneys and one of the fake electors live, but the case will be heard against all of them. Because again, the lawsuit, which was filed by a couple of the actual Biden electors from 2020, alleges that the defendants, the fake electors, broke several criminal and civil laws when they met at the state capitol on December 14th, 2020, in an attempt to fill out paperwork that claimed that Donald Trump had won the presidential election in Wisconsin when he did not, and there was never any evidence received that Trump had somehow defeated Biden when he didn't. Biden won by nearly 21,000 votes. It's a total that has withstood recounts. It has withstood partisan-led investigations. It has withstood a nonpartisan audit. It has withstood multiple lawsuits. And it was always going to, as we've explained, as the January 6th committee has uncovered. This fake electors thing was not some kind of a spur of the moment, just in case matter. This was something plotted out months before the November election as a way for Trump to somehow, you know, rule and use some other parts of the plot, including Mike Pence on January 6th, if he'd have gone along with it, to somehow usurp power and kick things back to the legislature. Fortunately, that didn't happen. But we were awfully close to having it happen in this country, and it's going to be attempted again if there are no consequences for the people who took part in this, not just the people at the top, the coup planners, but for the people like the fake electors who went along with it. And I'm not in any way suggesting that the fake electors need to go to jail. I am suggesting that there needs to be something in the written record, and it can be almost anything, you know, something that others might consider a slap on the wrist, but any kind of a sanction, any kind of a piece of paper that says we, the Wisconsin Elections Commission, or we, this court in this lawsuit, find that you acted fraudulently and we're putting up a record of that, or maybe it's a small fine, whatever the case may be. What do we always say about a bank heist? Even the getaway driver who didn't carry a gun, who didn't go into the bank, who might not even know exactly what everybody in the car was doing when they went into that building, The getaway driver is still part of the ring and still pays some of the cost of that heist or that attempted heist. And that is exactly what needs to happen here, both in the Wisconsin Elections Commission and in this lawsuit. There need to be consequences because this is the actual voter fraud, not the fake stuff Trump was claiming. This is the actual voter fraud. This is the actual breaking of election laws, it certainly seems to me. And if nothing's done about it, if there's no record against it, then we're going to have to go through this all over again. And it's only going to get crazier with things like, you know, artificial intelligence. I was talking to Luke Mathers on his program yesterday, and he was raising concerns about AI and deep fakes. And, you know, people are going to see future videos or get, you know, robocalls or whatnot that, you know, people are going to say, yeah, that really is, you know, that's Joe Biden or that's Tony Evers or that's somebody else saying or doing this terrible thing when it is not. And that's the kind of thing that's only going to be encouraged if there are no consequences for what they tried to do in 2020. There need to be consequences when you do something, when you engage in this kind of fakery. Well, that takes me to a new kind of fakery, and that would be the investigation of the Russia investigation. And that was something that fell to special counsel John Durham, who finally put out his report about the FBI's launching of the Russia investigation in Donald Trump's 2016 campaign. If you'd forgotten about it, I wouldn't blame you. I think everybody forgot about it. Didn't know this guy was still in business. Didn't know this guy was still getting paid by you and me because the Trump administration, or Trump's attorney general, Bill Barr, gave him this mandate to investigate the start of what prompted the FBI investigation into ties between Russia and the Trump 2016 campaign. Well, John Durham finally put out his report yesterday, and it fell with a dud. There was what was in there were things that had already been addressed years ago in terms of the process of how the FBI launches investigations. But this thing was supposed to be so much more. How many times did Donald Trump say at rallies and in press conferences that the Durham investigation was going to uncover the crime of the century? It was going to find the deep state. It was going to expose massive wrongdoing by law enforcement and intelligence officials. And instead, the investigation was underwhelming at best, with only two criminal cases brought to trial and prosecutors lost both of them. There was nothing in this report that suggested new charges. There was nothing that really found a deep state because it was never really intended to. It was intended to harass the FBI for investigating the way that the 2016 Trump campaign was eager to accept help from Russia. And that's what the Mueller investigation did. The Mueller investigation, while it didn't go as far as people wanted, it still resulted in 36 criminal charges against individuals, including convictions of a half dozen Trump associates. And it determined that Russia intervened on the Trump campaign's behalf and that the campaign welcomed the help. What was still cloudy is whether you would call that, you know, the legal definition of a conspiracy. And so Mueller and his team, rather than recommending charges against a sitting president, said, we're going to leave that to Congress and the rest of the Department of Justice to determine. Well, again, Bill Barr, Trump's attorney general, purposefully and willfully misconstrued. He perverted what the report said. He kept it under wraps for a while and said, I've looked at the report and it completely exonerates Trump. Well, then when we all got a look at it, we saw exactly what the Mueller report said, that yes, Russia did intervene on the campaign's behalf and the Trump campaign did welcome the help, and that Congress and the Department of Justice very well could have or should have followed up. But because of the momentum started by Bill Barr in saying that it didn't really say that, nothing ever resulted from it, except that Trump and Barr said, well, now we got to go after those people that were investigating us for welcoming that help from Russia. And that's what the Durham investigation was. And what it was a way to harass the FBI. The people who keep telling us that we shouldn't, you know, defund the police, I have been more than happy to talk about defunding the FBI and continuing to attack verbally and denigrate the men and women of American law enforcement, who not only try to keep us safe on the streets, try to prevent terrorist attacks, but also try to prevent other people from stealing our elections. When we come back, some uplifting news from Christina Laurie in The Uplift. Some of the stories that she covers for us at Up North News at upnorthnewswi.com. My conversation with Christina next. You're up north. It's time for The Uplift now on Up North News Radio, where we get to talk to my Up North News colleague, Christina Laurie, who puts together our daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Just click newsletter in the top banner. Christina, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
All right. The newsletter is a nice balance of, news stories, feature stories, little tidbits that make Wisconsin a fun and great place to be, either for, like we've talked with Sherita Booker about, Midwest mannerisms. And then sometimes it's just, good old-fashioned Midwestern nice. And we're going to start there with some folks who work in real estate, but they aren't just thinking about real estate in Wisconsin. They're doing good, basically a world away. Tell us more about that.
Yes. So a lot of times, I don't know, in my head, I lump a lot of realtors in the same category as car salesmen, where they're really trying to maximize the amount they make and not always so much focus on the customers. Well, these two Dane County realtors that I talk to are doing the exact opposite. So their names are Sibu Alidu and Lindsay Hagens. And Siba, he grew up in Ghana in a small town that I can't pronounce. I've never heard of it before. It only has a couple hundred people living in it. And it's really the definition of a third world country. He grew up in a house with no running water, no showers, just a hole in the ground for a toilet. And he's only in his early 40s. And this didn't happen that long ago. And today, in 2023, there's still a family living in that home. So conditions haven't improved very much. So once he got to America and was able to create a better life for himself, he decided to become a realtor. And what he and his wife, Lindsay, do with all of the money that they make, they invest it back in that Ghana town where he is from. And they've built houses, they've built apartment buildings. They're currently working on building a school and a hospital for the people of that community. So it's just a really great pay it forward effort that is going back and helping his own hometown. It really reminds me a lot, Pat, of what Giannis is doing for his community too. It's nice to see that when people make it here in the US where, the American dream is possible, that they don't forget where they came from.
No. And I think, that's one of the things we don't see enough in Wisconsin, because a lot of us, we've been settled here for generations. And if you live in another country, as I have for a time, and you get to see much more closely the folks who are immigrants or relatively new to a country, they are still sending back sometimes substantial portions of their paycheck to help support, family back home. And it's just a testament to the opportunities that you find in the U.S. and that you find in Wisconsin. So what a great thing to not just say, well, I'm out of there. See ya. Hope you can make it to Wisconsin sometime. And instead, not forgetting your roots. And that's a really admirable thing that folks can read about in one of our newsletter stories.
And it's a great effort too. So if anyone in the Dane County area is looking for a home, I know that, the housing market is still trying to build back up, but Lindsay Hagens and Siba Alidu, they're a great realtor company. And then that your dollar is going to help make an even bigger difference.
Let's go to school now, because we're getting near the end of the school year, which means that one teacher in particular isn't just going to be taking a couple of things, off the bulletin boards and putting things away in cabinets. This teacher is going to have a lot of work to do to deconstruct what has become a classroom that is filled with messages of love and encouragement, all thanks to that uniquely American invention, the sticky note.
Yes. Jennifer Doucette at Wanakee Community High School has quite the cleanup ahead the end of this school year, because throughout the school year, she encourages her students to leave little sticky notes on the walls. Sometimes they are encouraging messages. Sometimes they have little quotes. Sometimes they just have cute drawings. Sometimes they just have a joke written on them. Anything that would brighten your day. She's an English teacher, so she knows the power of words, which is how this all started. And students, just one by one, they kind of like layer on these post-it notes throughout the school year until the end of the year. Her classroom, it really looks like a whole mural. I know Pat mentioned that this might be a fire hazard, but maybe you're doubting the amount of paper that are in traditional classrooms. I mean, most teachers have their walls filled with, construction paper, bulletin boards. So they already have a lot of paper going on in there. Hers, just instead of bulletin boards, she has this student-driven effort of post-its on her walls. And I asked her, because I thought the million-dollar question is, what do you do with all of these at the end of a school year? And her answer was, it was pretty good. She said it is sad to take down these post-its because it's the students' hard work. But what she does is she laminates them so that they can last from year to year. And she, keeps the best, most memorable ones. And then students can go back and visit her classrooms. And it's kind of like a time capsule, of that school year.
That is very cool. And now folks can't really see this on the radio, but for Christina's benefit, I'm holding up a bag that is just, it's a plastic grocery bag filled with post-it notes.
I wonder what we're rolling over to.
When we first started Up North News, and Jessica Van Egren, who now reports for the Journal Sentinel folks, but she was working with us at the time, and I said, well, we got to get this office stocked up, so get some of these office supplies and include some post-it notes. She came back with an entire bag full of post-it notes, so I have literally thousands of post-it notes here that now I think I may have a school to donate them to that they can use next fall.
Honestly, that would be a really fun gift. It is Teacher Appreciation Week. So
there we go. There. That could get done that way. All right. Our third story is going to be about Culver's. And Christina, would you excuse me for just a moment to talk directly to just a certain subset of our listeners who are really focused on politics? Can you hold tight for just a second? All right. Stay right there. All right. You folks who are about to hear a story about Culver's, and you're going to send a note going, why are you doing a story about Culver's? Their owner donates to Republicans, and you did stories about Quick Trip, and their owner donates to... Stop it. We love Wisconsin businesses that take care of their customers, and people can give how they want to give. And I happen to know, because I was once in this world, that these are folks who give to Republicans and Democrats. So Christina and I are going to go talk about Culver's. Wisconsin, of course, is home to Culver's, but they're all over the place. And I liked the way that you framed this. If Wisconsin's number one for Culver's, who's number two?
Well, first of all, thank you for that clarification, because we do see all of your emails. We did get an influx after our Quick Trip story. We're anticipating another influx. We appreciate the passion here, but it's also important to know that Culver's hires a ton of people here in Wisconsin. There are 921 Culver's in the country. Wisconsin has 146 of them. And in a close second with 134 stores is our neighboring state, Illinois. That's where I grew up, so I can attest there are a ton of Culver's there. I can think of five within a 15-minute radius of my parents' house. So we have no shortage there. But rounding out the rest of the top five is number three is Florida, which is pretty far away. You're welcome for that geography lesson. Yeah. Also Michigan and Indiana. So two other Midwestern cities. But when it comes to cities in particular, I mean, those Midwestern states. But when it comes to cities in particular, Milwaukee has the most Culver's in the country, along with Indianapolis and St. Paul. Each of them has 9 stores. Minneapolis is next with 8, followed by Chicago with 7, and then Madison, Sioux Falls, Tampa, and Tucson all have 5. But they're really spread out all over the country. And a lot of us forget, this was just that Sauk City creation started with a single store about 40 years ago, and now it's just exploded.
I mean, a case of a local chain made good. And I will say, I'm actually surprised at the Illinois number. I guess I would have thought that, again, it being Chicagoland, there would have been all of these other chains and things that it would be a tough nut to crack. But again, if you've got a good product, you know, you can make it there. And frankly, Milwaukee surprises me for the same reason, because there are plenty of Milwaukee custard shops, born and raised, as it were. But there's room for them and Culver's as well. And again, it's really impressive to see just how far this one humble chain has spread over the years.
And this is another example of a company or a person that made it and didn't forget their roots, because every curd that is served at any Culver's in the entire country starts at LeGrand or Hillside Dairy in Stanley, Wisconsin. So they're still sourcing all of their cheese from here in Wisconsin. They're not getting it just because it might be cheaper in a different state. They know the best quality cheese is here in Wisconsin.
If you have a news tip about an uplifting story that you'd like to share, you can send it to Christina Lorey, all one word, and her last name is Lorey, at upnorthnewswi.com. If that's too much to remember, we get to the general email box is info@upnorthnewswi.com as well. Did I miss anything?
No, that's all. But if you have 1 minute, I did just want to make a correction. Last week, you asked me for my best graduation advice, and I was really unsatisfied with the answer that I just gave on the spot. So I let this sit for a week, and I've come back with a good piece of very simple advice. I would tell all grads, nothing really matters. I mean, when you think of things, we get so hyped up about giant things happening in the world. And that's why I love that we have the segment every week, Pat, because it highlights the good that's going on in our community. There's so much good. We're all so focused and so stressed out. When you think of it, there are very few things that matter at all. So that would be my riveting advice.
I feel like we've now got to play the end of that song by Queen, and Nothing Really Matters will be the lyric that takes us out of here. Christina, thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Bye, Pat.
Nothing really matters. Nothing really matters to me.
But like I said, I'm not really sure that would be, you know, my advice there, you know, but I think where she was going, and something that I say all the time, is that almost nothing is forever. Like the tough times that you're going through, whether it's in school or at work or a personal crisis, so many things blow over when you don't feel like they're going to, but eventually they do. And the things that do matter and the things that do last, hopefully marriages, other relationships, you know, the love you have for your kids, but even when you're struggling with your kids, those things, they don't last forever. You move on to other things. And same goes for the good times. So enjoy each day as you're able to. Got a couple of minutes before our next break here. So I wanted to touch briefly on a story in the Washington Post that confirms what we'd already known, but that while Republicans are insisting on punishing cuts to health care, to veterans, to all kinds of Americans in exchange for not holding the economy hostage as part of the debt ceiling, they are not willing to consider trimming back the $2 trillion in tax cuts that they gave primarily to the wealthy in the 2017 tax bill. The Biden White House recently gave Republican congressional leadership a list of proposals to reduce the deficit by closing tax loopholes, but Republican negotiators rejected every item. The proposals included closing a loophole related to cryptocurrency and a real estate loophole. The cryptocurrency one would ensure that investors could not claim a loss on an asset that they then quickly repurchased. That's a rule that already exists for stocks and other assets. And similarly, the real estate proposal would prevent investors from deferring taxes on swaps of property, similar to a rule on stock trades. But again, Republicans said no. They wanted to stick to the plan that they voted on last week, which would include new limits on federal spending, a clawback of unspent pandemic aid funds, a package of permitting reforms about energy production. When you look at what else they would do, like getting rid of billions in clean energy tax subsidies and end billions of funds in going to the IRS to help make the IRS more efficient and customer friendly, you look at the things of that the Republicans want to help. They want to help tax cheats by reducing IRS funding. They want to help oil companies. They want to help banks and predatory lenders who are responsible for the student loan debt that we're racking up. They want to benefit Wall Street and any big businesses that need people forced back into the workforce. The Republicans have been very clear that they're going to hold the economy hostage unless more is done to benefit Wall Street, banks, oil companies, and tax cheats. Those are their priorities. Keep that in mind as we continue this discussion of whether there's a deadlock over the debt ceiling or if this is, in fact, what it is, a hostage taking. We will have our history lesson and music break coming up after this. You're up north. That would be Mary Wells, who had the number one song on this day in 1964. My Guy would be at the top of the charts for 2 weeks. A lot of birthdays on this date. Liberace, who was equally talented and flamboyant on the piano. He was born in the Milwaukee suburb of West Allis on this day in 1919. Passed away in 1987. Robert Fripp, the guitarist for King Crimson, is 77 years old today. Actor Pierce Brosnan, who is Remington Steele and James Bond, and perhaps more importantly, Mamma Mia, if that's your bailiwick of movies. He is 70. Pierce Brosnan, 70 years old today. Help me with the name here. Aaron Christ Novoselic, the bassist for Nirvana.
Yep, you got it.
There we go. 58 years old today. Janet Jackson is 57 today, and actress Megan Fox is 37. Now, as Aaron helps me compile the list of number one songs on any given day, we're going to play the number one song from this day in 1953. It's called The Song from Moulin Rouge, Where Is Your Heart? Give a listen. It's probably not the kind of Moulin Rouge music you're used to. So anyway, that was Percy Faith with the number one song this day in 1953. I know when you think of Moulin Rouge, you probably think more like, you know, Lady Marmalade. I am reasonably certain that if Percy Faith would hear that, he would have keeled over at the thought of it. But we've made some improvements on Percy's music over the years. Pet Sounds, the landmark album from the Beach Boys, was released this day in 1966 with hits like Wouldn't It Be Nice, God Only Knows, and much more. This was an era when both the Beach Boys and the Beatles were in competition to see who could create some of the newest sounds, some of the most creative uses of music, of echoes, of technology, of all manner of things that were more than just playing some instruments up on stage, and we're all the beneficiaries of their little competition in the studios. On this day in 1970, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young scored their first number one album with Deja Vu. On this day in 1978, Joe Walsh of the Eagles released his solo album, But Seriously, Folks, including this classic. You don't even have to hear Joe to realize that's Life's Been Good, which he would do with the Eagles when they reunited again after that 14-year timeout in the 80s and 90s. On this day in 1980, Paul McCartney released his second self-recorded album, aptly named McCartney 2, because like his solo album McCartney in 1970, he plays all the instruments on the albums himself. in 1970s, the Beatles had just broken up, and in 1980, Wings was on the verge of breaking up. Again, this was Paul McCartney's coming up from his 1980 self-recorded solo album, not his 1970 album. On this day in 1983, Michael Jackson did the moonwalk on TV for the first time, and people fell off their couches all across America wondering, how the heck did he do that? That was part of the Motown 25th anniversary special. On this day in 1987, U2 had their first chart topper in the U.S., With or Without You, from the Joshua Tree. And Britney Spears had her second album released, Oops, I Did It Again, on this day in 2000, and it would go on to sell 1.3 million copies in the first week. So that, again, is today's history lesson and little music break. Just looking at comments online here, Roger Frost, Aaron, tells us it was 4 years ago tonight that the elevator got fixed. The Big Bang Theory aired its series finale. I did not know that that was 4 years ago today. Thank you, Roger. And again, big Big Bang Theory fan here. And so, yeah, it was a big deal when that happened. Have I asked you, Aaron, if you're a Big Bang Theory person or not?
I don't think you have asked, and I am not.
You are not. Okay, well, then I'm not going to share a bunch of these stories with you. But it is definitely one of those hit-or-miss things. I know plenty of people who never watch it, and then there are folks like me that still watch pretty much every rerun that comes up. We just enjoy it. It's a nice ensemble comedy. And earlier in the series, you know, there was this running gag that the elevator in their building, you know, didn't work. And, you know, they lived up on the fourth floor and had to go up all these steps. And finally, one of the episodes was kind of a flashback series that explained, you know, how the elevator came to be broken. And again, the point of the shtick isn't the thing. It's that, again, a well-written show will plant little seeds like that. And you never know when eventually we'll figure out, you know, how such and such a thing happened. If you can really use a flashback to full effect, you know, that's the kind of writing I really enjoy. What are your own sitcom wise? I mean, I know about you with music and with games. I've heard about some of the movies you go to. Well, where are you on sitcoms overall here? What are some of your favorites? Do you watch anything in reruns?
I know a lot of what I have watched was more when I was younger, like Hannah Montana, all those Disney things.
Oh, heck.
Just because I watched it with my sisters and then the reruns kept coming on. Mm-hmm. And then as I moved away from watching TV, watching cable, I watch way fewer sitcoms, but It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is funny. Definitely not kid friendly.
No, not at all. That's actually one that I knew I would like if I started watching it, but I just never got into the habit of watching it. So would you say you've watched pretty much all the episodes that have come out?
Not all of it. I've watched maybe half of it because I only started watching it relatively recently.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Hannah Montana, that's Miley Cyrus, right?
Yeah, now that I think I've seen all of it.
So that had to be an interesting swing, watching Miley Cyrus go from, you know, all-American clean-cut girl to launching her solo music career, where she very decidedly wanted not to be Hannah Montana.
Yeah, she could no longer be tamed, as she said.
Oh, is that how she put
how she
it?
Said yeah. It? No, she said, "I can't be tamed."
Okay, that was, you know, and that's how the, you know, the wild child label comes about for plenty of young women when they grow up, when they simply want to be themselves and not want to be boxed in again. Hey, coming up in the next hour, we're going to have some important news for drivers to keep in mind on the roads. This is planting season, and much like at harvest time, you got to be willing to share the road with tractors and other farm equipment. So we'll explain that and much more coming up in our next hour. You're up north.